podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit allaboutandroid.ting.com. That's allaboutandroid.ting.com. Welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 111. Ooh, binary. Recorded on Tuesday, May 28th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. My name is Jason Howell.
I'm Gina Trapani.
Hello, Gina. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you? I'm missing Ron.
Yeah. Missing Ron. Unfortunately, he couldn't even join for the first, you know, half of the show from the airport Wi-Fi. He's got other things, but he'll be back next week. We've got a pretty cool show lined up for next week, and we will tease that later. But first, let's tease this show because we have an awesome guest joining us today, Daniel Bader, senior editor of Mobile Syrup. Daniel, it's a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Super stoked to get you on. And, you know, one thing that, you know, the show definitely reaches outside of the U.S., although I'm sure many people would probably agree that a lot of the news that we end up talking about is very U.S.-focused. Mobile Syrup, you guys are up in Canada. You're based out of Toronto, right?
That's right, yeah.
Excellent. So kind of good to kind of get a little bit more of a, I guess, I was going to say a global perspective, but I guess you're right up there.
It's close enough.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we have Montreal, so it's kind of European.
True. I would totally agree with that. It's the European flair. Anyways, we're really stoked to have you on the show, and thanks for helping us kick around the stories today. We've definitely got a few things in here that come directly from your site, one discussion in particular that I'm really looking forward to. But other things this week, we have that would be the ultimate question, to hack your phone or not to hack your phone. Also, 4.3 is surfacing in more places. Gmail changes are forthcoming. Just a lot of changes in the air and so much more. But let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to the news.
Android 4.3, the new version of Jelly Bean, not Key Lime Pie. Pictures and video have surfaced of it running out in the wild at the Thailand Mobile Expo 2013. A few images surfaced, and then Droid Life, posted a video of 4.3 in action. The only thing we know about 4.3 right now is that they've retooled the camera UI. Mm-hmm. And this video, which Chad is going to play right now, will show you kind of what the camera UI looks like. You know that right now in 4.2.2, when the camera's running, if you long press on the viewfinder, you get this kind of circle array, the circle menu that appears, and you can slide your finger around to choose things. It looks like they changed it to an array that a circle or an arc that appears above the finger. So you don't have a circle that goes around where your finger is actually blocking a couple of the menu items.
Yeah, that was definitely really annoying, or that is really annoying on the current kind of camera UI. I'm not sure I dig the look of it, though. I don't know.
I don't either. So you can see in this video here, he's long pressing on the viewfinder. He's getting that arc, and then he's selecting an item in the arc, and then a new arc appears. So it's nested menus that show up kind of transparent. But what's weird, I don't know, I don't like it, Jason. What's weird about it is that, like, it's not clear how to back out. I mean, I guess you slide your finger down, but the menu you were on disappears.
There's no context.
And it just
context.
Feels like it's there's no context. And it's got this, like, this what I would argue is just a general problem with Android. And then it's just, like, levels and levels of settings. Like, what if I just want to take a picture? So I don't know. I think it's an improvement over the current UI, but I thought the current UI, I didn't like the current UI either. I mean, at least this isn't, your finger isn't blocking any menu items. But at the same time, it looks like an awful, large number of settings there. There's also a setting at the bottom of the screen. If you don't want to do it anywhere in the view top finder, there's also a settings button at the bottom of the screen that you could use as well. So I don't know. That's all we got. That's all we know about 4.3 so far.
Yeah, I don't know. Like the camera, I use it so much, and I guess I've gotten used to the annoyance of hiding things and just kind of knowing what was underneath there. I suppose this is an improvement, and who knows if this will even make it into the final thing. We're still in that kind of fantasy land that is Rumorville.
Yes.
But I suppose it's a little bit of a change. It is in the sense that things aren't hidden anymore by your finger, and that was kind of a silly
no
mistake in the beginning. But
it can't get any worse. So
yeah, true. But
that's true.
You know, but I do also agree with what you're saying, Gina, as far as like the nested menu items. Like Android, to a certain degree, for the greater amount of people, needs to be simple to use, hopefully, yeah. And that does kind of put on a layer of kind of confusion as far as how you got there. And it almost seems like more settings are surfaced in that than I get when I pick up the current app and play around with it. So I don't know.
The timer is one. There's a timer on there, which is kind of interesting. There's tons of settings. It's the Android way, right? Though, you know, it's for power users with very customizable. I am of the mind, particularly around the camera, I want the phone to take the best picture given my circumstances, and I want it to take it when I press the shutter button, period. So there have been lots of times when I've touched the viewfinder to bring something into focus, and then by accident slid a little bit, and then suddenly it was in this menu situation, and I was turning off the flash, I just want to use the defaults, take the best picture, period. I just want to be done. I'm sure that not everyone feels that way, but I would actually like it. If we could disable the settings arc from the viewfinder, just have it on the bottom of the screen where it's a definite button, I would probably do that.
Yeah. Let's see here. So I will just go ahead and preface by saying that the news focus of this show is definitely heavier on the apps and on the hardware. So, maybe I missed something, but I really didn't find a whole lot of other kind of earth-shattering general news. What I did find, and you posted this yesterday, Daniel, is a pretty cool, interesting kind of think piece around hacking your smartphone. And I identify with it completely because I've fallen into the camp. When I had my Motorola Droid, I was all about hacking and ROMing and flashing and I think you called it crack flashing in here, which actually
crack flashers,
flashers, where you always have to flash the new ROM. Every other week it's a brand new ROM and everything. So I've totally been there, and then now not so much. What is your take with this story here, Daniel?
Well, I started jailbreaking an iPhone, and eventually when I got to Android, it was just a hacker's dream. You could root it and back everything up, and at the time Android, it was so much less capable than now.
Yeah.
And all these ROM creators, they were just going out of their way to create new features. Whereas I think now most ROMs are just variants of either AOSP, the Android open source project like Cyanogen, or they're basically just modified versions of the stock ROM that comes with your phone with a few tweaks. And I just find that the benefits no longer outweigh the issues that inevitably come up when you install a ROM. And I know, when you install, say, a variant of a stock ROM on your phone, like I've done with the HTC One and the Galaxy S4, it doesn't change that much. But at the same time, you get into this mindset where you could always be flashing the new ROM, and there's always some new feature on the horizon, and it's never good enough. It never feels really complete. And I've just gotten to the point now where I feel like, at least with the phones I use, the stock feature set is so good, it's so married to the hardware, that I'm just done. I'm tired of it. It doesn't do anything for me anymore. And honestly, the response I got from this, which was just kind of an off-the-cuff, I was going to make it into a Google Plus post, and now I kind of just like, oh, yeah, let's throw it out on the blog and see what people say. It got this enormous response.
Yeah, it
this
did.
Unbelievable. People were supporting me, people were completely against me, and I loved it. I loved the discussion. And there was even another guy, Derek Ross from Android Authority, who wrote a response to the piece I wrote, which was an amazing response, very valid points, and I love that there's so much passion around hacking your phone.
Yeah, and it was interesting kind of watching this play out because I feel both sides. Like, I read your article and completely identified with it because, like I have the Galaxy Nexus, you know, and it's a stock phone, but it's also on Verizon. So to a certain degree, considering what I do every week here, you know, what we do with this show, I felt the need to have to, I mean, aside from the desire to do it when I first got the phone, but I felt the need to root it and then ROM it so that I could just stay current with versions, because, you know, Verizon isn't going to allow me to stay current with versions. And I feel like I need to stay current with versions on the show. At this point, like, I found myself more and more, especially over the past, you know, handful of months, thinking, I need to move to a better carrier that does support current versions, better the current Nexus devices. And I'm not entirely sure if I would root it, and I'm pretty positive I probably wouldn't ROM it unless I had to. I don't know. Where do you sit on this, Gina?
I'm with Daniel. I used to hack my phone a lot more, and I stopped for two reasons. One is, like, I just don't have as much time. Exactly. When I was writing, when I was doing Lifehacker full time, or if I was doing, you know, a mobile OS blog on a daily basis, that was mostly my full time job or close to a full time job, I would be more willing to put time into it because it would be part of my job. And I guess you could argue it's part of my job doing this show, but I also feel like, so it's the time factor. Similar to what Daniel said, I didn't feel like the benefit outweighed the amount of effort and things that can go wrong and the amount of time you have to redo it and whatever. But then there's also, for me, I think that Google has been a really good steward of the Android project. And I'm really interested in what the default Android experience is. And I want to be close to that because I feel like most people have that experience. I think there's, you know, there are the super geeks and the power nerds who are certainly our audience here. But most people aren't modding their phones in these ways. So I kind of want to have that as close an experience to, you know, what most people are getting. Now, I usually get Nexus phones because I want the pure Google experience. Not most people don't have that experience, right? But I'm sort of interested in Android as, you know, the open source project that Google's kind of leading. I'm so glad that there's this community of people who do it and who write the software to hack phones and stuff, to mod your phones. But and I think it's kind of a platform's dream. It's a great thing about Android. I love that it exists on Android, although it does exist for iOS as well, right? There's the jailbreak community. It just feels like there's less need for it now. And I just don't have the time. I need my phone to work. I depend so much on my phone. It's in my pocket. It's my main computer. I do so much stuff on it. I can't afford for something to go wrong when I need for it to work in order to get my job done.
So incredibly true. Yeah. What were you going to say?
Well, Derek brought up a good point in his article, something that I didn't consider. Some 40% of users are on older versions of Android that aren't, you know, considered current, like Jelly Beans. So we're talking ICS or Gingerbread even. And these phones that are, you know, mature, they won't be updated. The carriers, the manufacturers, they've kind of just abandoned them. They want to sell new phones. That's their job. That's how they make money. So these developers are keeping these phones alive. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the OG Droids. We're talking about, you know, the first Atrix and all these phones that are still decent devices, but they would never have been upgraded past Gingerbread. And I mean, that's valid. That's amazing that these developers can do that. But totally. At the same time, there's always, you know, if a manufacturer decides not to release a kernel source or keep it up to date or not release drivers that are needed for the graphics, you know, there's always going to be glitches when you're loading new software. And I agree with Gina. I need my phone to work. I use my phone for my job. And when I can't make a phone call on my phone because, you know, some driver isn't properly optimized, you know, that's bad for my business, that's bad for my life. So in that sense, I think Android's gotten to the point now where it's good enough out of the box, you know, since TouchWiz or stock Android.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely agree. But yes, absolutely, on the other side of it, the developers that spend all of their time sinking their time into, you know, elongating the life of your old unsupported device. It's, I mean, huge props to the folks that work on that kind of stuff, because that's absolutely what saved me when I had the OG Droid. And, you know, especially at the end of that life, it was like, oh my God, I'm dying here. I need to get a new device, but I can't quite yet. And those developers are creating versions, you know, ahead of what the device was really even capable of, in air quotes, supporting, but they were getting it to work. And if you wanted to kind of jump through some hoops and maybe put up with a little bit of lag and stuff, you could still kind of feel like you were experiencing something ahead of what you were supposed to be able to do. The other side of that is, of course, security issues. You're opening up your device for potentially more security holes, and that's an issue. The inconvenience of flashing those new versions, which in the early days of my doing this, that was exciting. And now, as you say, just don't have the time. I will say CyanogenMod does, and maybe other ROMs do this as well, but I've been pretty much running CyanogenMod on my device for quite a while now. They have an auto updater built into the settings, so you can actually go into the settings and set a check for daily, weekly, whatever, and it's all done through settings. So it makes flashing newer versions, if you want to do it on a daily basis, a lot easier, and that totally takes some of the trouble out of the whole process.
Right.
I will point out one thing in the chat room. Sueda has been, posting update after, or message after message along the lines of, haha, sounds like an addiction, which it kind of was. Like, I know when I was
totally
flashing
ROMs,
it was totally an addiction. It was like, oh, there's a new one? Must flash now. Must, reap the benefits of this right now. And then he went on to say, Sueda says, this sounds like an AA meeting. Correction. It's an AAA meeting.
It's an AAA meeting. It's a completely legitimate hobby. I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't, I think it's a fun thing for enthusiasts to do. Absolutely. And I don't want to discourage people from doing it. I don't want to be like, oh, I don't have time for that. I think it's completely legitimate and cool if that's what you're into and you have the time. My life didn't allow for it. I enjoyed it at the time. I'm glad to hear that it's gotten better. I think one thing that frustrates me is there are times when I've been like, oh, I really wish my phone did this. And then someone will say, well, you can do that with this app. Step one, root your phone. And be like, nope, doesn't count. Step one, root your phone. That doesn't count. That's not legit. That's not like I could root my phone, yes. But like, let's come up with like an answer for sort of real people or normal people. And I still think that sort of regular Android users are not quite there.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
But it's great to be able to do it if you so choose.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing, before we move on, that I'm always amazed at is when you go to the top paid apps in the Play Store, I'd say 5 out of the top 20 are root-enabled apps. You have to have root to use these apps. And something like Titanium Backup, which is really the only reason I continue to root my phones.
Totally.
Because Android's backup, mechanism is pretty terrible. I mean, when you get a new phone, it tries to restore your old apps. But if you interrupt that process, you're pretty much done. Then you're left on your own. So I think the prevalence of the community, I have to say, huge props to these people who day after day try to improve these old upcoming devices. Something, when a phone doesn't come with the latest version of Android, these guys are working day and night to fix the issues that these new versions have. But
absolutely,
as you said, it's a preference, right? And it's just a matter of how much time do you have to put into it.
Yep, completely agree. Good discussion piece. I'm sure we're going to get some emails. In fact, we would love to hear from you on either side. AAA@twit.tv, or you can leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA and let us know what you think about that. So speaking of, let's listen to a voicemail. We have this guy, and he's kind of going a little nuts about something, and I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I'm going nuts here.
See?
I've got a new Samsung Galaxy S4 with Android 4.2.2. I have tried to select Chrome as the default browser, and I keep getting, every time I go to anywhere, I get this error pop up, complete action using Chrome or internet, and then there's a choice of always or just once. So I always select Chrome and I always select always, and yet I keep getting this same box back and back and back. I've used all sorts of operating systems over the years. I've never, ever, ever had to continually tell it to always use it. Thank you.
I love that he just gave up. He was like, oh, I get it.
This is exactly what one sounds like.
Totally.
One has reached this point.
Yeah, like we've all been there. Maybe we haven't been there with this particular issue, but we've all been there. So as far as this particular issue, I'm curious to know if either of you have any ideas. I mean, you know, up until he pointed out in the voicemail that he clicked always, you know, you're like screaming it at him, and then he's, oh, so he does it every single time, so he's already tried that. Why is it not sticking? Does either of you have any ideas why that would be?
I'm looking through, I'm digging through the settings, and there's a place in the settings which shows what your default is, right? I'm trying to find it.
Well, I know that if you set a default, then it should, so you've got browser and you've got Chrome, you set a default to always open Chrome, then I think that's a default attached to, I can never remember if it's the app that you've chosen or the app that you've chosen against. I think it's the app that you've chosen.
It's the app that you've chosen, right? So like, so Chrome Beta is my default app. So if I go to, Settings, Apps, App Info on Chrome Beta, it says launch by default. You've chosen to launch this app by default. So my first bit of advice is just to go to, go exactly there. It sounds like he's running Chrome, not Chrome Beta. To go there and see, and then there's I see a button that says clear defaults. I'm not sure it should be saved there. Yeah. I don't know why it's not.
You know, one thing you could try, depending on your version of Android, is if you go, let's see if I can get there. If you go into the app and then where is it? Okay, so I'm going apps. Ah, there we go. I don't know if we've changed the position of that camera.
No.
So if you go into the app settings, there is a way on all apps, I believe, in Ice Cream Sandwich or higher to you're not going to get it on this. Let's go into browser because that's what he's doing here. Browser. And of course, I don't have it on here. There is a way to isolate it and freeze it almost, like stop it from running. Isn't that right?
Right. So, yeah, you can
disable.
It's
not an uninstall. It's disable. There's the word that I was looking for that I couldn't find. You can disable it. So if you went into your browser and disabled it, wouldn't that take it out of the equation?
Yeah. The only other issue that I think that he may be having is some apps you have to choose a different default for each app. So Instagram, when you click which camera to use, it has a default. But then when you try to click the camera in the browser, it will have another default. So it looks like the camera that the phone has forgotten, but it's just asking for your default for that specific app.
And that's true.
And like, say you're in a Twitter app and you go and you click on an Instagram photo, it'll first take you to the browser and then it'll ask you again.
Yeah, what you want to do.
What app you want to open. Mm-hmm. So you might have the same dialogue or seemingly the same dialogue twice,
even though it's
performing two different functions. So eventually, I think those pop-ups will stop. Once you reach the limit of your default apps, then it should subside. Otherwise, I don't know.
Now, let's go ahead and go into a mystery world here where none of this works and you just keep getting this forever and ever and ever. I can make your life just a little bit easier, just a little bit. And I learned this over the weekend on Google Plus thanks to Jordan Hotman. And it kind of blew my mind when he pointed it out, because I get this little pop-up when I go to take a picture, take a new photo, and it says complete action using, and it gives me the little menu. And forever, I'm like, okay, well, if I want to do, you know, camera this time, I have to camera and then just once. It's two separate steps. It takes a little while to process that, right? Jordan Hotman on Google Plus said, why don't you just double-click your choice? Double-click automatically selects just once. So I hit it twice, boom, goes right into camera. Well, it would if my phone was fast.
That's nice.
That's like this little hidden feature that I did not know existed. And ever since I found that, it was like, hallelujah. So there's that.
Yeah, did not know that. Although weird because you don't know if it's just once or always.
So the double click. The double click is just once, is what I'm confirmed. But you wouldn't, like, why would you know to do that and what it actually does if you guessed it? Supposedly it's 4.2 and above. So if you're running 4.2, there's something that you might not know how to do. So anyways, hopefully we gave you a couple of different ideas, Anonymous, and hopefully you aren't still totally frustrated. Let's take a quick break. If you don't mind, we'll thank our sponsor of today's episode, Ting. Ting is a no BS mobile service, actually an MVNO reseller of the nationwide Sprint network. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about how Ting is different, because they are very different. They have no contracts or early termination fees, things that, you know, commonly if you're signing into a new mobile phone service, I mean, it's just a standard almost these days. No contracts with Ting, no bundling or ride-along services, no overage charges or penalties. If you use more than you thought you would, you actually just pay for what you used. It's really convenient that way. And you actually get credits on unused service as well. If you use less than you thought, they're going to drop you down a level so that you hit the appropriate level and credit the difference to you on your next bill. They don't add on for, you know, additional charges for additional services like caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling. All that stuff is just kind of part of the service. No add-on charges there. No mysterious line items on your bill. And they can actually, you know, it's they don't hide any of these fees from you. If you really wanted to get in touch with them about anything, their customer service is off the charts. No hold customer service support policy. So when you call, you're going to talk to someone between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They have a really powerful online account control panel, so you can take control of your account. And pretty cool, unlimited devices on one plan. So you can have as many devices as you want, sharing pooled minutes, messages, and megabytes. And each device on that plan actually costs a flat $6 per month. So here's how it works. Here's what you do. You purchase a mobile phone from Ting, which you're going to receive in 2 to 5 business days. Then you'll activate your device with Ting and have the option to select a new phone number, or you can also port that existing awesome one that you don't want to let go of. Finally, you select the monthly minutes, the messages, megabytes, basically the plan that you think is going to represent your usage, and Ting will actually bill you the beginning of the payment period, but you'll be charged and credited in the following pay period for what you actually used. So here's what you can do. If this all sounds awesome to you, check out Ting. Visit Ting at allaboutandroid.ting.com. And you can save money by going there. Actually, if you go there, you can use their savings calculator so that you can see exactly how much you or your company can save by doing this. And All About Android viewers are going to also save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. But it's important. If you want to sign up and get that $25 off the device, you have to use allaboutandroid.ting.com. That's what you need to know about Ting. Start saving today. Allaboutandroid.ting.com. And we thank you so much for your support of All About Android and the Twit Network. You guys are awesome. Now, let's jump into hardware. All right. We've been hearing lots of rumors here and there and seeing lots of leaked photos about a white Nexus 4. I'm not even sure if people are like have to have a white Nexus 4, but apparently phones come out in black and then later white these days. The white Nexus 4 is in fact real. LG says Hong Kong can order it starting tomorrow, and the rest of us will have to wait for the next several weeks. But we can finally put to bed the speculation that exists around that and now say, yes, it does. Who wants one? Either of you, does this excite either of you, white Nexus 4? Or you kind of already have your device, so it doesn't matter.
Nexus 5, please.
Yeah, there we go. Nexus 5. Oh, so LG's certainly working on a Nexus 5, right? They must be. I've heard those rumors. Actually, European LG Mobile VP Wan Kim got all loose-lipped in an interview with Dutch publication All About Phones. I like the name. And a few nuggets appeared right before our very eyes. First, LG is not currently working on a follow-up to the Nexus 4, as had been rumored the past couple of weeks. But they say they are open to the possibility.
What does that mean, though? I keep thinking there's no way that the Nexus 5 is not currently in development with somebody.
Right.
So, I mean, what does that mean when he says that? He's open to the opportunity of what?
Yeah. I suppose that they're open to the opportunity of doing another Nexus device. Maybe not necessarily the Nexus 5. But yeah, you're right. There's probably, I imagine there is a Nexus 5 or whatever the next Nexus is right around the corner. Hopefully we see it by year's end. I imagine we will. But yeah, probably just another Nexus would be my guess. So let's see here. Wan Kim also mentioned that LG is working on an Android tablet. If you remember last year, LG kind of put tablet development on hold to focus on smartphones. Now, you know, if you're a big LG fan, you have a tablet potentially to look forward to. That's about all we know. We don't really know much more than that. So there you go. LG fans unite. Woo!
no flexible display.
Oh, that's right.
So sad.
Yeah. Well,
that's too bad.
All right. Yeah.
Well, what are we going to do with a flexible display? We're just going to try and, you know,
bend
use
it.
We won't know how to use. Yeah, I suppose so. We won't know how to use a flexible display. We don't need that.
Well, mounted the columns.
What's interesting is that Won Kim said they don't need such a marketing success again, as if the Nexus 4 was this. It sounds like he was being facetious, but the issues with supply initially, and you know there were some build quality problems that led to a second version of the Nexus 4. Remember, they added those little nubs because the phone kept falling off tables.
Yep.
Because it was so slippery. I don't think this has been a bad thing for LG at all. In fact, I think that them building the Nexus was probably the best thing that could have happened for their Optimus G.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was being facetious, and I don't know if he was, but I think he should be a little bit, he should be appreciative of the relationship with Google.
It was good for LG's profile for sure in the Android world, because before the Nexus 4 kind of came along, and I mean, we've joked about it on the show many times, where it was LG. It was like, really? Are there LG Android fans out there? Because we don't really see many LG phones that really, kind of light a spark under people. The Nexus 4 has. It's had its issues, like you say. Certainly the launch wasn't that awesome. And I continually see people kind of upset with the fact that it has a glass back. As cool as it may look, it makes it a lot more fragile. So. But yeah, it definitely raised LG's profile for other devices for sure. And
let's check in with HTC.
Yeah, HTC, they've got a few things going on here.
HTC's got a little bit of a roller coaster going on.
I know.
So
I kind of don't want to watch.
Yeah, I know. We reported last week that the HTC First, which was the phone that shipped with Facebook Home, sales in the U.S. were absolutely abysmal. They reduced the price from $99 to 99 cents. And this week we found out that HTC was supposed to take the First to the U.K. and to France, and they decided to hold off on that. And it sounds like this happened on guidance from Facebook itself. This is the quote. While Facebook works to create a better Facebook Home experience, they recommended that Orange in the France and EE in the UK hold off on launching the HTC First at this time. That's an indefinite hold off. And the folks at Facebook said, as a result of customer feedback, Facebook has decided to focus on adding customization features to Facebook Home, which is kind of interesting, and will limit support for new devices at this time. It sounds like Facebook has gotten some information about what users want, or they're just trying to improve Home itself, which of course is distributed through the Play Store, so it's not dependent on the First. But the First just isn't going to Europe.
Yeah, and I also heard that initially HTC had a deal supposedly with Facebook to have kind of an exclusive release of the Home overlay with the First before it was released to the Play Store, and at some point Facebook kind of decided to change that and have it be a concurrent release. Obviously, the other way would have probably been pretty good for HTC to be able to release the phone beforehand to kind of add a little bit of exclusivity into the experience before it was unleashed to everybody. So
they would have had a lot of journalists buying handsets to review Facebook. Yeah,
absolutely. Do you think it would have changed? Do you think that would have changed anything as far as kind of the outlook of the Home overlay? If it had been done that way, or do you think it would kind of be the same story?
Well, considering the Facebook Home was downloaded, I think, a million times in the first month or 10 days or something. I forget what the number was. It wouldn't have had the testing facilities that it did have if it was an HTC First exclusive. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people purchased the HTC First? We think that it's been discontinued. So
yeah. Not many, yeah.
So I think this was the best thing they could have done for HTC Home. Sorry, Facebook Home. I keep getting those two conflated.
Yeah.
But the HTC just kind of got left in the wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really did.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook saying that it's a result of customer feedback, they're making changes to the app. They would not have that feedback if it had been exclusive to the First, right? Because not that many people would have used it. They have millions of users' feedback, perhaps millions of users, or a million users who installed it, tried it, and then disabled it.
I suppose
that they have all those usage stats.
I suppose to some degree it would have been okay for HTC better than this, because before that feedback would have come back, and you know, we're looking at 1 star by a landslide in the Play Store reviews right now, HTC still would have sold that phone to would-be buyers who were curious about the experience to begin with, who in this case, all they had to do was download it, install it if they had a supported device, and figure out that they don't want it. So, but that's not a long-term game, obviously. That's not how you dig yourself out of the hole that HTC's in right now.
Yeah, Facebook was smarter than that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And perhaps better news for HTC, the HTC One shipped close to 5 million units in the first month since launch. Those are pretty solid numbers that apparently an unnamed executive is happy with. But if you compare to the Samsung Galaxy S4, they shipped 10 million units sold. 10 million units sold in less than a month of availability. So that's double. That's double what the One purportedly shipped. Speaking to the Journal on Wednesday, the unidentified HTC executive said that orders are pretty good so far, and they're more than what we can supply. So, you know, putting on a good face, saying the HTC One is doing really well. And these rumors about a Google edition, pure Android experience, Nexus-like experience on the HTC One persist. We talked about this last week, and all of us kind of roundly said this is probably not going to happen. But a few sites, Geek.com, Android Central, have all confirmed that the HTC One Google Edition, quote-unquote, does exist, and it'll be announced in the coming weeks. So this will be interesting. I'm actually kind of interested in HTC One running pure Android.
Yeah,
so we'll see what happens. What do you guys think? Yeah, it's a good-looking phone, and I just, like, the one thing that I wanted was, you know, kind of the pure Android experience on it.
Yeah, I think it's the best-looking phone. Like.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Sorry.
I completely agree. I mean, I've been using the early builds of Cyanogen before I gave up the goat, so to speak, on the HTC One, and it does. It feels right. The button placement is a little bit weird. I don't know if I love that, but everything else it's good. I mean, they're taking chances, and I think that HTC's always taken chances. The HTC One X was a really fantastic device. It was well built. I think the One S was even better. I don't think it got nearly as much recognition as it should have, but it to this day I think it's really held its own in terms of build quality. I just think that people don't know about HTC. Whenever I took the phone out, they were like, "Oh, is that an iPhone?" And I kept getting that question over and over again, as if people were not aware of HTC as a company, but also they're not that aware of Android as a platform. And I'm sure you've even spoken about this in earlier episodes. It's a Galaxy or it's an iPhone. And I think that's really where HTC's kind of fallen down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it looks a lot like an iPhone, the One. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does. But yeah, it's true. There's an opportunity here.
Yeah, it certainly has the attention to kind of the fine detail within the hardware design. That's definitely the one thing that I've always really liked about HTC, is their attention to the design on the hardware side. I don't know if a Google Edition HTC One is the kind of thing that lights the world on fire, particularly if they do what Samsung's doing with the S4 Google Edition and just selling it through the Play Store. It has to be in stores for it to be appealing, and to really move the needle very much for HTC. So, so hopefully it's available.
Be a specialty, specialty power user enthusiast kind of item. Yeah,
but I'm completely down with all of these devices having kind of this option. I love seeing more. You know, I would love to see more of that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For geeks like us, because that's pretty much what it's for. And then finally, the Nexus 7 that we kind of thought maybe we'd see at I.O. We didn't end up seeing at I.O. A number of rumors from different supply chain sources are actually pointing to a July release of the follow-up. Rumored specs have it with 4.3. So if that's the case, and we're probably going to hear, I mean, if this is the case, it's total rumorville, but we'd probably start hearing something about 4.3 pretty soon now, to kind of give a little bit of build up in anticipation of that. A Snapdragon 600 processor, an upgraded 1920 by 1200 HD display, and pricing still remains the same, say sources. So cool.
That would be a good tablet.
Cool. Yeah.
That would especially be. Since Google has pushed developers to not only update their apps for tablets, mm-hmm. but they've given them so many new tools to market these new apps. I really think 2012 was a great year for Android tablet hardware. I think 2013 is going to be a good year for tablet software, finally.
Yeah, I completely agree. Google's yep. really kind of put their foot forward and making that reality. Hey, just real quick before we move on, going back to HTC One, I was just thinking about something. The cool camera stuff that happens inside the HTC One, the Ultra Pixels, does that change when you have a Google edition? Like, how much of that is software?
A lot of it.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Apparently, because assuming the build is based on the open source project, like the stock builds of Android on the Nexus 4, you'd get the same camera app as you would on the Nexus 4 or Galaxy Nexus, which would give you that annoying thumb menu. It would take away HTC Zoe, which is right. a really, really cool feature. So assuming they do go with what's going to be on, say, the Galaxy S4 Google Edition, which will also have the stock camera, I don't see how they could incorporate the current UltraPixel features.
I mean, that's kind of a big deal right there. Yeah. I mean, the UltraPixel was a huge reason of why they were touting getting the HTC One. Wow. Yeah, obviously we don't know anything, but that would be a pretty big kind of concession for stock Android. Maybe they'd figure it out on an app basis, but I don't know. Anyways, okay, cool. Well, let's check out an email here. Barry from London writes in. It says, Google recently has been making a lot of noise about their awesome photo services and how everyone has, quote, unlimited storage. I was wondering if you knew if the unlimited storage is only for the instant upload or auto backup photos from the phone. As when I upload photos from my Mac, it seems to eat into my storage. I can't find anywhere online that states whether or not the unlimited can be used for normal uploads from a computer. Do you know? My guess is that it goes against because of a sizing factor. My impression was that anything above, 2560, or there's a certain size limit for photos that if it falls underneath there, you get unlimited photos. If it's above it, you don't. But maybe it works differently on the desktop than it does on the devices. What's up, Chad? You're nodding.
Yeah, I'm nodding around. So I'm trying to quickly actually find the page that it says on the Google Plus page. But yeah, so the unlimited is for automatic uploads from your phone that they have resized to a lower resolution. If you decide to go with the upgraded or original resolution, then that eats into your, I believe now they've upgraded to 15 gigs.
Right.
And that's why you would buy more storage. I was trying to find the page that would do that, but I
just dropped it in the rundown.
Oh, good.
I just put it in the chat. Yeah.
There we go.
Perfect.
Okay. So there we have your answer. Thank you to both of you. When I will be completely honest, when I read this email, I totally scanned over the Mac part of it and I was like, oh yeah, unlimited. That's just, yeah, this is the size thing. But as I was reading it, I realized
this
is a little bit deeper
videos.
Than that.
Yeah, right. This applies to videos as well. So if it's a video is less than 15 minutes long, it's unlimited. But if video is longer than 15 minutes long or taken at a higher resolution than 1080p, will count against your Google Drive storage quota.
Wow, 15 minutes, that's a pretty good chunk
pretty
of
long.
Time for
it is.
For
that's a long video. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's saying photos in a standard size, which it says standard size is 2,048 pixels.
On the longest
edge.
But ultimately the big part of that is that it has to be done from your device. If it's desktop, it's different.
Right. I don't see, it doesn't say anything about which device it's coming from. I only use photos uploaded. I only use the phone feature just because I'm positive that it's talking about automatic upload from the phone.
Right.
Now, it could be that if you upload something from your desktop, you just need to now be aware of what size you're uploading to make sure that you don't eat into your gigabyte cap.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
And two megapixels isn't that much.
No, it's not. Yeah, so easily if you had taken photos off of your phone or off of a digital camera and decided to upload them, in most cases, unless if you have a phone from 2001, or a camera from 2001, it's going to be more than 2 megapixels.
I would be really surprised if they treated photos that you uploaded from your phone differently from photos that you uploaded from your desktop, right? It seems like they're only going to differentiate on size, not on client. Yeah, yeah, okay. That seems insane.
I agree.
But you're more likely to upload a larger photo from your desktop.
Man, when you put it in megapixels terms, I didn't realize that was 2 megapixels.
Yeah.
I just didn't do that conversion in my head. I'm like, that's big enough.
Now, their storage prices is pretty competitive. So if you go check them out, it's per month. So it's about $2 for $2.50 for, it's about $0.10 per gigabyte per month. $1.20 a year.
So doing gigabyte. 16 terabytes for $800 a month.
Yeah, I know, right, man? I mean, totally. Like, why wouldn't you? look, it costs $50. Like, you could host your own Flickr service for $50, you know?
Yeah.
Terabyte.
I wonder how long before Google decides to match the free terabyte of storage of Flickr.
Perhaps.
You think they're going to?
What's that?
You think they're going to?
I don't know. I'm just wondering if they would.
I don't see why not, because most people aren't going to upload that much.
Yeah.
And if you're just grabbing the mind share of people, they look at Flickr and they go, well, I have a whole terabyte to play around with. And on Google, I only have 15 gigabytes. And if you want mind share, I would suggest give everyone a terabyte. Not everyone's going to use it. And if you have a terabyte of data uploaded and you hit that cap, I'm more inclined to go ahead and shell out some money to Google instead of try to move that terabyte to another service.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, Flickr needed to say 1 terabyte because they needed headlines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right? Certainly a great way to grab headlines. That's a lot.
Google should come out with the 1 petabyte version of, yeah.
I mean, at that point, just unlimited it.
I don't know. 1 petabyte sounds way cooler than
that's
unlimited.
That's true. Everybody has such a sour taste in their mouth about unlimited. They're like, no, it's not really unlimited.
Right.
They're going to take it away.
Yeah. Or it's unlimited until it's limited, and then it's different. Cool. Well, there you go. Hopefully that's helpful to you, Barry. Let's jump into some apps. Chrono's saying 2048 pixels is 4 megapixels.
Yeah, he's correct because 2048 times 2 yes.
Thank you, Chrono.
Did I get my math wrong?
Thank you.
It's correct if that was the number of pixels. If you had a 1 pixel by, you know, truly, let me completely confirm because you have to square it. 2048.
I'm not smart in the ways of this stuff.
I know.
I'll leave it up to you guys with newfangled calculator.
I left school for this.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, he's correct. It's 4.1 megapixels.
Thank you, Chrono. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chrono.
There we go. Fended off a few emails there. All right, Gina, Google Drive.
Google Drive, big update, version 1.2, new interface, optical character recognition. This is a really nice upgrade for Drive users, and we are, because our rundown is here on the spreadsheet. What's new in Google Drive? You get the new grid view, makes it easy to find your files. You can quick preview photos and files and within the app. This is really cool. You can scan documents, and Google will do optical character recognition, so then you can search inside those documents. So if you wanted to scan, for example, a receipt, if you've got an expenses folder, which is, in fact, I think CNET did a really neat how-to, how to scan your receipts when you're on business trips or whatever, and then you can search for those inside of Drive. You can download a copy of your files to a local device, and that's Honeycomb and above. The spreadsheet editor's gotten better. It's easier to change fonts and colors and cell alignments, which is kind of amazing that you can do this on a touchscreen device. People, like, remember we all had to buy Excel and we use it on our desktop? Crazy. Just general bug fixes. Really nice update. And I think I'm going to start using this scanning. I mean, this is kind of like Evernote land. But really, really nice way to just keep track of paper documents that you want to have on hand wherever you are in the cloud.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have an embarrassment of riches in terms of storage providers now on Android. You know, Dropbox has a great app. Drive is now really, really good. And as we were saying, as Chad was saying, it's not that expensive to upgrade your 15 gigabytes to 100 gigs. You know, it's what, 25, 50 bucks a year. It's really not that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
It's cheaper than Dropbox.
By far.
Absolutely. Love that that app is getting improved. It's funny that you say how crazy it is to do spreadsheets on our touchscreen, because I mean, even 6 months ago, the Drive app, or even before that, you know, the Google Docs app or whatever, editing a spreadsheet in that thing, oh my God, it was such a nightmare. yet I wanted to do it all the time because we run all of our shows using Google Docs spreadsheets.
Yeah, using spreadsheets, yeah.
It felt like you were filling out a form from 1992.
And it would just go wrong.
And then hitting submit and hoping that a pigeon would take it to the dock in the cloud and then enter in all the data, like from a monk or something like that. Now, one thing with the receipts is, man, I hope that they have some sort of processing, because as you can see, like in a normal receipt, there's tons of information that really doesn't matter. And I hope that that comes in later, but I don't think that's built in quite yet, other than plain optical character recognition.
Yeah.
That's funny. With these kind of technologies, like it makes me so happy when I go to an ATM now and, like, deposit checks at an ATM because it scans it and figures out the amount, you know, even though I'm, like, depositing checks, which is the most insane, like, ancient, insane kind of thing. Like, so on one hand, I'm like, this is awesome. On the other hand, I'm like, why do I have paper receipts anymore? And Chad, you're right. Like, there's so much information on the receipt. But, you know, what struck me about the line that from Larry Page's speech at Google I.O. that, like, has stuck with me in the last 2 weeks is that he said on stage that he does most, like 90%, I forget what he said, but he said most of what I need to do in order to run this company, which is like one of the biggest companies in the entire world, I can do from my phone. And that really kind of made an impression on me. And I've actually been trying to do everything that I need, you know, as much as I can do for my jobs on my phone as well. And it's surprising. I mean, I enjoy having a full keyboard because it's just more comfortable, and I like having a big screen, and I do enjoy working at a computer, but it really is incredible what you can accomplish, you know, I'm pecking at a tiny touchscreen. And it's because of apps like this.
And in such a short period of time. I mean, 5 years ago, that wasn't the case. 4 years ago, that wasn't the case. But in the last couple of years, that's just become reality, that we're used to spending that kind of attention and that, you know, doing all of those things with this tiny little device. Pretty damn remarkable to think where we've come in the last few years.
The future.
I know, future, man. Whoa.
We're here.
Well, if we want to take a dip into the past week, that is, Play Magazines got updated last week. New lighter UI. It's not an app I really use a whole lot, but I think these are a few things that we kind of missed from our I.O. coverage. So I thought it was, you know, worth throwing in there. Play Magazines, new lighter kind of hollow UI. You know, obviously getting kind of the new paradigm in Google Apps, which is the slide out sidebar, which I've really liked having.
So pretty.
Yeah, it's really nice having that kind of side thing. And so if you're into Play Magazine, you know, if you're into magazines on your device, because, you know, like we were talking, you get everything on your device these days, Play Magazines has the update. Go check it out. I would say more people might be stoked on the changes to Play Books, where they added up to, where actually you as a user can add up to 1,000 PDF and EPUB files to your Google Play online library, something that I know people, you know, big fans of books have wanted to do for a really long time. So now you can do that using Play Books, and go get it. You know, it's got some design tweaks as well to the app, but pretty cool that you can kind of add that to the app as well now, up to 1,000. Now, what you got here? We haven't talked about Amazon App Store in a while, Gina.
We haven't, but good news for, or at least for mobile readers, Amazon's Android App Store is finally launched in Canada and apparently nearly 200 companies.
I'm sorry, I'm out of here.
Oh,
sorry.
After this is 2 years, so after debuting on the US only Kindle Fire, this is 2 years ago. I mean, the great thing about the Amazon App Store is they've got that free app, that everyday free app, right? Which you have to have the App Store installed in order to use those free apps. So there's one free app per day, and apparently, or at least today's free app, it looks like it's pretty good. The apps are usually pretty good, the free giveaway. And it sounds like the Kindle Fire HD and the Kindle Fire 8.9 inch is also launching in Canada, which will be shipping June 13th. It's a couple weeks away. So are we excited? I want to hear from Daniel about this. Is this one of those things where you're like, finally? Or is it one of those things where you're like, meh?
Personally, meh. Finally, okay. For everyone else. I think we've been missing out. I think a lot of countries, not just Canada. I don't want to leave out, you know, the hundreds of other countries that have way more people in them. But seriously, Amazon's kind of been tiptoeing around international expansion for so long. You know, we finally got Prime shipping a couple months ago in Canada, which I love about you know, Amazon, and it's an amazing feature. I think the Kindle Fire expanding to other countries is probably just a matter of getting the choice out there. I mean, really, the only cheap tablet that we have that's even remotely viable is the Nexus 7. So, and we don't have music downloads, nor do we have the video functionality that comes with Amazon. So, you know, it's not exactly, it's not a great option for Canadians, but it's a good one. And it's a nice alternative to the Nexus 7.
Yeah, I mean, and the Nexus 7 is a great tablet in and of itself. But it's always nice to have options. And certainly there have to be people that are kind of all in on what they can get out of Amazon. It's kind of a bummer that you don't have access to all of the features, though, because the Kindle certainly kind of revolves around that access. You kind of remove some of those pieces and it becomes a lot less compelling.
And 2 years is a long time to wait.
Yeah,
this
it is.
Like, wow, 2 years. This is we often get email from readers or listeners or viewers who are like, hey, you guys talk about things US only and it just kills the rest of us, right? Because we don't have it. Mm. And that's a long, it seems like a long time.
I know.
With an Amazon.
But the App Store, you know, I think Amazon's got a decent thing going in the sense that it's curated and there's no crap. You know, you don't find anything with malware, hopefully, in the Amazon App Store. And I think that having it as an alternative, especially with that one free app a day, it's pretty compelling. You know, that being said, the Kindle Fire is no longer a high-end tablet. I mean, it's running on a chip that, you know, from a company that doesn't even make systems on a chip anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're talking about last year's hardware, and even last year it wasn't that fast. The other thing here is that we have the Kobo Arc, which is a Canadian company, and I don't know how many people in the U.S. know about it.
I reviewed it on
a decent tablet.
Yeah, I reviewed it on Before You Buy last week. I think it was last week. I don't know. They all blend together. I actually gave it a don't. I gave it a don't buy, but that was purely based on the fact that it's already been out a while, and we're so close to kind of some of the other competing tablets refreshing that I wouldn't recommend to just rush out and buy a Kobo Arc right now. But that having said that, I was torn with the review because I really enjoyed kind of the screen was great, the performance was great. You know, all things considered, it was a pretty decent tablet. So, so let's see here. Finally, Gmail. Gmail apparently has some updates happening. That we might be seeing sometime in the next week or so, potentially, as this article on Talk Android says, tomorrow, Wednesday. But some images of the redesigned Gmail app were actually included. Sorry, some pop-up came up here. In a presentation at I.O. that kind of hinted at some designated categories for auto-sorting your mail into different buckets like primary, social, promotions, updates, and forums. And a new tip actually says that release of that updated version is set to hit sometime this week, probably Wednesday. We'll see if that happens. Interesting that the app seems to kind of be taking into its own hands the filters that, well, I imagine us geeks have already instilled, but the greater population, maybe they don't do the filters, so this would be really beneficial. What do you guys think?
Oh, it looks like this is an implementation of that Gmail feature, which I thought was a Labs thing. Excuse me, but it must not be a Labs thing.
There was a Labs thing. I remember.
Yeah, there's a Labs thing that sorts things into these categories, like social promotion, updates, forums. I actually have this enabled, so I have all these labels in my Gmail inbox on the web. But this must not be a Labs feature because they wouldn't enable this by default in the Android app if it were. And I am having a hard time finding it. My Twig foo is failing me right now. But this looks really, this looks really cool. I have these labels enabled. They're actually pretty, Google Gmail's pretty smart about categorizing your things this way. I've had to teach it and say, hey, no, this isn't a promotion. This is actually a message from someone that I wanted. But this is something that's really nice, particularly on your mobile phone. I live in Gmail on mm-hmm. my Android phone. I use Gmail as my primary email account. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just want to see, or at least I only want to see the super important stuff, right? I don't want to see social updates or mailing list messages necessarily. I just want to see the most important stuff, or at least want to have the choice. And so this looks really cool. And this just looks like nice looking Android design. Like, look at this nice sidebar. Like, it's got kind of soft edges. Look at that settings gear. Like, this is good looking stuff. And whenever you get a good update to a native like Google app, mm-hmm. you can see hints toward sort of design, Android design. You know, it's the sort of canonical Android design, path. You can see where Android design is going. So.
Right, and bringing in the profile photos and mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Does it matter that the time on the screenshot is 4:30? I pick up what I'm laying down. 4:03? No.
Okay. I was like, you're 10 minutes off, Jason.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, it's not 4:21.
You guys are like, wow, he just went off the deep end.
I was like, oh, poor Jason. He thinks that 4:30 is when everyone.
Let's watch him dig himself out of this one. Ha ha ha. Anyways.
It's smart labels. Yeah. That's the name of the lab. It's a smart labels lab.
Okay.
Yes. And it is a lab. So that's weird that it would be default in the Android app. Perhaps it's an opt-in thing.
Yeah. Maybe it's such a wildly successful lab feature that they've decided to give it the green light officially.
Go for it. Yeah. I just hope
haven't they done that in the past?
Taken a lab feature and kind of moved it into...
I mean, I know they've done it with Maps. I don't know if they've done it with Gmail.
Yeah, they've graduated Labs features to be default part of the. So that might be part of the announcement. Maybe it's Smart Labels has graduated and it's on by default. Or maybe, and this would be really cool, you can turn on Labs features in the Android app. That would be really awesome.
Mm. Was Priority Inbox a Labs feature? I honestly don't know, but maybe it wasn't.
I don't Priority Inbox was, but they had some signature stuff that was a Labs feature. The nested latex was a Labs feature. Like there are a few Gmail things that are that used to be Labs features. I'm not sure if Priority Inbox was.
I don't think it was.
Just
a quick search. I don't think it was. Cool. Well, I hope so. Use that app all the time. So hopefully I like what I see there. Let's take a quick email and then we'll get right into the arena. But before we do that, Robert... I mentioned on a show many moons ago about kind of integrating more developer apps from fans of the show. And Robert wrote in and said, I love the show. I've discovered many great apps. This is my first time writing in, but I thought I'd take the opportunity to introduce you to my app. It's called Wi-Fi Prioritizer. It's a very simple app whose main purpose is to prioritize Wi-Fi networks. As well as force a reconnect when a higher priority network is available. The typical use case, for me at least, is when you tether your tablet to your phone or vice versa, you want the tethered device to automatically switch to your home wireless network when you're in range. Through the settings, you can also fine-tune how quickly it jumps between wireless extenders at home. Anyways, thanks for your time. I just thought it was kind of a nifty thing that I would imagine is going to solve, the issue that some people have as far as changing around the priority of their different many wireless access points. So you can kind of move it and then, set it in settings so that it hops over at a certain interval. It's a simple app, but it's designed really well and wanted to kind of showcase that. So it is called Wi-Fi Prioritizer. Go ahead and check it out in the Play Store. You can find it in our show notes at twit.tv/AAA. Probably very, very useful for a lot of people out there. And
nice job, Robert.
Yeah, congrats, Robert. And thank you for sending that in. If you are developing an app and you want us to talk about it, we'd love to hear about it. Send an email to aaa@twit.tv or leave us a voicemail. You're certainly welcome to do that as well. 347-SHOW-AAA. And we will consider it for the show. All right. Without further ado, let's battle.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Boom! And last week was episode 110. We had three, I thought, pretty solid entries into the arena. Wii Video, which, you know, was mine, so I'm kind of attached to it. Expensify and Flickr, and the returns are in. Flickr wins.
Ooh, it was a skin of my teeth.
Yeah, it was a pretty close one here. 37% is the top spot for Flickr. Wii Video second at 33%. Expensify third at 30%.
This might be the closest arena ever. There's 12 votes between Flickr and Wii Video, and then there's like 12 votes between Wii Video and Expensify. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty darn close. That tells me that we had three solid apps. I love it when it splits so evenly, because then it, you know, then we know that all the apps did great.
That's a beautiful pie chart there, folks.
That's right.
Thanks for voting.
That tells you might as well just download all three of them, because they're all equally awesome.
Absolutely.
So that would mean, of the folks that are here that were here last week, namely me, I lost. So I go first. The app that I'm going to talk about today is called SnapPea. And basically what this is it's a way to – I've done some apps where you can kind of access the content of your device through your browser via a Wi-Fi access point. This is another way of doing that, but it's a little bit more visual. I think the last time was a Wi-Fi – and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I use it all the time. My memory is horrible.
AirDroid?
No, Wi-Fi File Pro. File Explorer Pro. That's the one that I featured in the past. SnapPea is a little different. It maybe ends up a little bit more picture focused. And essentially, like, I'll show you the app. There isn't a whole lot to the app itself. You launch the app and it kind of tells you, go to a browser on your computer and enter that. You have to be on the same Wi-Fi access point, so this isn't going to do you a whole lot of good, this little code that it gives you. And basically what you do is you then go to your computer, go to that web page, and enter that code, and bam, you've got a little bit of a sync. So if you go ahead and roll the B-roll that I did, this is just my desktop. I also installed a Chrome add-on, which I'll show off right first here. I pull this down once I'm synced, and it gives me all the photos that are on my device, right? It allows me to click into any of those photos. This is all streaming from my phone. I'll go ahead and click into that. It'll pop it up full screen. And then I have the capability, you know, of skipping through all of my photos one by one. Down at the bottom of the screen, you can kind of see it down there. But there's a little slideshow button, rotate if I wanted, trash can, and then download if I wanted to download the full size. So there I am with my little baby daughter, Savannah.
You're killing me, Jason.
Little moment. Got to throw those in. So you see this nice kind of gallery of all of your pictures that are on your device, and it just makes it really easy to kind of go through really quick and pull it off. See, there I am looking handsome.
I like the parted hair.
Yeah, thank you. That's a new look I'm working on.
Yeah.
So I could find that and download it and set it as my wallpaper. Go over here. This is the messages. So you can actually access all of your message history and take a look at it. And I kind of blurred it out, obviously, but it gives you all of the different conversations. You could vaguely make out what I had there. You have all of your contacts. If you want to kind of go through and prune your contacts and look for certain things, you can do that through there. And then finally, you have access to all of your apps to where, you know, accessing it through here, you can just kind of see them all on a really big screen, do things like uninstall them, check out the permissions. You can install an APK from here. I just really like kind of the UI around it. It makes it really easy to kind of see exactly what you're looking for. And yeah, so it's called SnapPea. It has a few components to it, but it is free. And I don't know. I thought it was pretty, so I chose it.
Jason, how does this work? Is this uploading everything to snappea.com?
No.
Or is it like a proxy to your device? Like, what's happening?
It's through, as far as I know, it's through your local Wi-Fi network. So you're using the SnapPea website to basically make the connection. So you get that code on your phone. You go to their website and you say, that code that you just sent me, that's to this browser right here. And then
okay, so it's remotely browsing your device. You're not uploading. You're
not uploading. This is all, and this is all happening on the internal network. I think that connection is specifically just to say, yes, your phone to this browser. And then if we're on the same Wi-Fi network, then all of that communication is happening between the computer and my device directly. So
cool.
then I kind of have access to it that way. As far as I can tell anyways, and maybe I should investigate that while everybody else kind of shows off their stuff, but that's what I understood it to be. But there you go. Snap P.
I like it.
P, one word. P-E-A. There you go. All right.
Yeah, very cool. Good choice.
Excellent.
But don't vote for it. I like it, but don't vote for it.
Why? Do you have something that's, what, better?
I do, actually.
Okay,
do.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm going to demonstrate something called Maluba. And Maluba is, they call themselves a Do engine, and they also call themselves a Siri competitor. And it's a little bit of both. It's not quite the same as Siri. It incorporates elements of Google Now, but it's just overall a really slick app. Basically, the input is pretty similar to Google Now in the sense that you can talk to it using the microphone. You can also type into it, and you can inquire about various things. You know, where's the closest sushi restaurant, places like that. You can do things very similar to Siri in that sense. But it also has a few quirks and a few improvements over Siri and Google Now. It incorporates shopping, which the Maluba guys, and I have to give a shout out to them because they're based out of Waterloo, Ontario. Basically, they've talked about how they're really smart at just answering semantic questions. So they're really good at responding to just regular queries that you would, you know, ask a friend, ask a family member. You know, let's go for a pint. Where's the closest Irish pub? But they also do incorporate with shopping. So they have a integration with Google Shopping, and you can say, where would I find a Nikon camera? And it would break it down for you based on location. It would break it down for you based on price. So if I ask it, where can I find a Nikon D7000? It'll say, here's the place that's closest to you. Here's the place that's offering the lowest price. So it's kind of like a price matching service as well as a geo finder kind of thing. The other thing that it's really good at, and what was added recently, is TV show announcements.
Sorry, I muted it so you could continue talking, but I said, where can I buy a Nikon camera? We'll see.
Let's see what comes up.
There we go.
Yeah, so in the U.S., it actually incorporates with a few more places than here in Canada. So it has Google Shopper. It also has Best Buy and Walmart. So you can have different prices based on the based on the shopping list and the price chart that they've basically plugged themselves into. So they've got tons of partners as well that they're using. If we want to back out of the shopping one and go into TV, so if you just scroll to the right, you'll see,
there we go.
So television was a feature that was recently added, and you can basically ask it, for different shows based on where you are. So it plugs into Cox, it'll plug into Comcast, in Canada, Rogers, Bell, Telus, basically any provider. It also has the over-the-air listing. So you can say, when is the next episode of Seinfeld? It'll come up and it'll show you, okay, it's on channel 331 at 3 o'clock and it's on 336 at 3:30.
When is the next episode of Seinfeld? Let's see here. Is that muting my mic when I do that?
Oh, you're on like mic two or something.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Sorry. So unlike Siri and Google Now, it doesn't talk back to you. And I know that some people do like that audio feedback, but it's really smart and it's really fast. And the other thing that they recently added. So, yeah, you have a listing of the show. And if you slide to the left, you can see the info of the show itself. So there's lots of cool stuff. And you also can see it on IMDb. So they use Rovi for that, and that's a great partner as well. And the other feature that I like is sports. So you can say things like, when is the next Spurs game? It'll, or I guess we don't We don't have the results yet, but it'll come up with different NBA results. They have NHL, they have MLB, and they said that they're going to be adding more in the next release. So it's just got a bunch of really cool stuff, and you can use it as your organizer as well. So you can plug in reminders. If you go back to the main screen, you can plug in reminders on the bottom right there. You see those three icons. You can create a reminder. You can create a new event, and you can also create an alarm. And it has integration with Google Now. So if you actually swipe down from the home button, like you would access Google Now, swipe up from the home button. Yep. It'll give you the option of opening up Maluba by default, which is awesome because if you do like what it can offer, you can actually create it as a default and use it like that. Oh, so
nice.
I really like it. And it hasn't quite replaced Google Now for me because it's more of an active engine rather than a passive engine. But at the same time, the breadth of information and especially the emphasis on things that Google Now doesn't offer you, like a shopping experience or a television show experience, it's pretty fantastic. And it's free. And they're constantly updating. They have an SDK, I believe. They also have APIs that developers can plug into. And they've expanded to Windows Phone. And they're also going to be updating for, you know, other platforms. So they're trying to move beyond just smartphones. So they're a really interesting technology company rather than just an Android app developer. They're trying to create it a bit more of a breadth for Maluba as a brand rather than just being a Google Now or a Siri competitor. But right now, that's pretty much what you have. And it's got a lot of work to do. I think that in order to really compete with Google Now, for people to know about it, it's got a lot of brushing up to do, but it's pretty good as it is. So, Maluba.
Awesome. I really like kind of the visual kind of approach on the results. Like you come back with the TV show episodes, and it's not just a flat list of links you can click on, like, you know, search results in Google Now, but it's actually, I like pretty pictures, I guess is what I'm saying. But no, the visual flow of it has a nice design language to it.
So. That's right, yeah.
Cool. So that's Maluba. For those listening, it's M-A-L-U-U-B-A. Maluba. There we go. So Snappy, Maluba, Gina, what are you going to kick our butts with this week?
Wow. Well, compared to the two that you guys picked, I've got a very, very simple app choice. It's a weather app, which sounds really boring, but this is a really good weather app. My app pick is called Arcus Weather. It's A-R-C-U-S, Arcus Weather. There's a free ad-supported version. There's a pro version, which you get for $149. This is what I like about Arcus. It tells you in very specific terms when it is going to rain and for how long, like pinpointed to your location. So literally you start up Arcus and it'll be like, if it's going to rain, it'll say heavy rain starting in 4 minutes for the next 35 minutes. Like, and it's very, very accurate. It's based on forecast.io. So if you go to forecast.io, that's a really great web-based weather app, which does the same thing. Forecast.io takes 16 different weather data services and aggregates them all together and uses an algorithm to figure out, like, what's the most likely time that it's going to rain in your location. So if you're taking the dog for a walk, if you've got a soccer game, if you've got some sort of event, you're getting dressed, you don't know whether or not you should put on rain boots or bring an umbrella, this is the app that you want. So it's not your regular just kind of forecast, maybe mostly cloudy. Honestly, I'm here in San Diego. It doesn't rain very much. So it's not as useful here, but someplace where it does rain or if it looks like it's going to rain, you definitely want this app. And it's a really nicely designed app. Now, I should say it's powered by Forecast.io. It is not Forecast.io's official Android app, right? This is kind of a third party. This is a third party Android app. Still, it's really nicely, well-designed, uncluttered, clean UI. It'll give you severe weather alerts. It's got a home screen and a lock screen widget. When you add the widget, you can choose between a light background, dark background, transparent. It's got a dash clock extension. It can do the weather in your notification bar. It supports multiple locations. So if you travel a lot, you can say, you know, here's work, here's home. Is it going to rain close to home? Is it going to rain close to work? You can do that as well. And it's got a few different tabs. So it'll give you the weather for today, and then it'll do 7-day, et cetera, et cetera. Like I said, there's a free version that you can try out just to see if you like it. It's ad supported, so it does have a banner ad at the bottom there, which I think you can see on Jason's.
It with the lower third there.
But if you like it and you want to pay $1.49, you can get no ads and up to 5 custom locations. The free app only supports 2 locations, and you can set your widget interval options. Right, so the free version it updates the widget every 1 hour. So. Really super simple weather app, but backed by Forecast.io, which is a really cool service. My co-host on my other show, Kevin Purdy, was saying that he was like out walking the dog and checked Forecast.io and was like, oh, it's going to rain in 2 minutes, and like suddenly found himself dashing home because in exactly that amount of time it started to rain. So it's pretty cool that it'll get down to the minute when it's going to rain.
No kidding.
So yeah, that's Arcus Weather. Like I said, super super simple, but also really useful.
Awesome. Arcus, ARCUS weather. Mm-hmm. Free as well as $1.49 pro version with no ads. Cool stuff. Awesome lineup this week. You can vote for your favorite app of the arena this week by going to aaapoll.com/111. That's easy to remember. aaapoll.com/111. Let us know your favorite. Is it Snap Pea, Maluba, or Arcus Weather? Early reports are in. Arcus Weather takes the lead. Snappy, the close second, tightening up the lead. Oh, man. Wow, this is just all over the place. We'll see where this turns out over time, because the early report doesn't really matter a whole lot, it seems. Yeah. Things change so drastically.
I have to say, I've been using Arcus for a while. Forecast.io is beautiful. And what's interesting is that it's not an app. It's HTML5 based, and you actually access it in the browser on mobile. Which is crazy because it runs so smoothly and it's just really, really nice. Wow. And you can also access Forecast.io in your Android browser. But I've been using Arcus, and you're not getting my vote, but it's a really good app.
Oh, well, thank you. I may not be getting your vote, but you're helping me out here, so thank you.
I mean, don't scratch that. Take everything back.
I'll remember to edit that out. Is that would that help? No, I'll leave it in. Nice. Excellent. Let the apps speak for themselves. So this was an excellent arena. Next week, we are happy to welcome back a return guest. I think it'll be his third time. Joe Braidwood of SwiftKey is going to join us to talk about, I'm sure, everything SwiftKey, as well as all of the stories that we'll be discussing on next week's episode. But as far as this week is concerned, Daniel Bader, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. We hope that you'll come back sometime soon and join us for another night.
Thank you so much for having me. Seriously.
Absolutely. We're stoked to have you. This is your opportunity to kind of plug whatever you have going on. Tell people what you're up to and where they can find your work.
So I spend a lot of time on Twitter at JourneyDan, but my life is mobile syrup. I am a senior editor at Canada's largest mobile website. We cover all things Canadian, but we also delve into app reviews and hardware reviews. So check us out, even if you're not Canadian.
Excellent. Thanks once again. It was great having you on mobilesyrup.com. And Gina, what do you have going on?
Folks, check out my Android app. It's a text-based task manager. You can check it out at todotext.com, todotxt.com. And I also co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, which airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time. That's with Leo and Jeff Jarvis, where we talk about Android on that show as well as all things Googleverse. And I'll be on tomorrow, so you should join. That's pretty much it.
All the news that's fit to podcast. Chad, what about you with your fancy new camera setup?
I know. Now? Look at this. We got like a camera. You can see people behind us. It's awesome.
You're lit up. We can see.
I know.
Chad.
We got these crazy. I could turn the light off if I wanted. I could turn it back on. It's insane.
Oh my gosh.
So I do a few shows here on the Twit Network. I do This Week in YouTube, which covers YouTube news. I do OMG Craft, which is all about Minecraft. And then I've been doing some personal stuff on youtube.com/omgchad. I play through the game of Slender. So if you want to see me like scream and crap my pants.
You got scared.
I did. Uh-huh. I screamed like a little girl. So if you want to go check that out, you can go to youtube.com/omgchad.
Excellent. Check it out. And finally, you can find me at about.me/Jason Howell or music stuff, yellowgoldmusic.com, or just the internet in general. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode. We love hearing from you, and we love bringing your comments into the show. So please give us ammunition to do that with aaa@twit.tv, or you can leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. We also love video mail, so send a link to your video to aaa@twit.tv. Twitter, we're on there at Android Show. We're also on Google Plus. We've got a great community there, so check it out if you're on the Google Plus. And show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find all of our past episodes there, YouTube, iTunes, all over the map. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.